Welcome to the Manor.
Welcome back to the Twin Terrors Macabre Manor of Mead, Metal, and Mayhem. I'm jumping in, James.
I'm ready, Jody.
So I think I heard, but I'm not entirely sure.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to get my beer first.
Okay, give your beer first.
Mostly because I've had it before. It's easy. And saving the bigger stuff if we end up doing another episode. But right now I'm just having a Belhaven Scottish Ale.
Ooh, nice. Oh, yeah. That's some good stuff.
Caramely, biscuity, malty, slightly bitter. That's what I'm having.
All right. Well, I'm trying to look mine up here. Oh, okay. There it is right there.
Woo-hoo.
I'm having an original Leipziger Ghost by Bayerischer Bonhof in Germany, in Leipzig. It's the first time I've had this. I think you gave this to me.
Oh, could have, maybe. It seems kind of familiar, but I'm not entirely sure. I'd have to look it up, and I'll look it up when you put it into the app that shall not be named.
No, maybe you didn't, because you have not rated this.
Okay, then no, probably haven't.
Okay. Maybe I bought this at the beer store because it was a German beer.
Yes, Das Boot.
Das Stahl.
I know, but I like saying Das Boot.
You like boats?
I like the movie Beer Fest. So, what are we talking about?
Oh, what are we talking about?
I don't know what you're talking about, Jody.
This is going to be the final episode of our Tommy Bolin story.
Boo! Hiss.
Okay.
I'm not going to give any spoilers.
Yeah. So for any of our listeners who already know the story, you know where this is going. For people who don't, you know, who only learned of Tommy Bolin from us, you may already see where this is going.
And on the third day, he ascended into heaven and rose and saved mankind from Elvis.
Sure, yeah.
All right, well, I've got my OneNote ready to go, locked and loaded.
Okay. All right, so we'll jump back into it. So after Deep Purple split up in March of 1976, Tommy Bolin was free to put together the type of band that he wanted and to play his own music. Because remember, his first solo album, Teaser, came out around the same time as Deep Purple's Come Taste the Band album, and Tommy did not get to tour in support of his own album, although on the Deep Purple tour, he did get to play some of the songs from his album.
I thought you were going to say the darn tootin' tour.
I don't know what I was trying to say there.
Yeah, I remember you talking about the songs he did on the tour.
Yeah, yeah. But according to his girlfriend, Karen Ulibarri, the pressure of now being in charge got to Tommy, and his drug and alcohol use got worse. Many of the quotes used in Greg Prado's book, Touched by Magic, which is where I've drawn a lot of the Tommy Bolin stuff, mentions how out of control Tommy was getting at this time. And it's not that he was trashing hotel rooms or racing cars on Sunset Strip in Los Angeles or anything like that.
Killing drummers and, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But the amount of substances he was consuming were reaching critical levels. Drummer Narada Michael Walden, who had joined Tommy for his first post-Deep Purple shows, left after a disastrous gig in New York where Bolin was so out of it that he was falling down on stage. And someone even said that he felt off the stage.
That sucks.
Yeah.
And for the other band members, because, hey, I got my big break. I'm playing with Tommy Bolin. Oh, fuck this.
Yeah. His drug and alcohol abuse led his record label, Nimperer Records, to drop him. But because he was starting to make enough of a name for himself, he was immediately picked up by Columbia Records. And by June of 1976, he was back in the studio to record his second album. The Private Eyes album saw him expand his sound with more diverse styles while developing a more commercial sound. And whereas Teaser had been largely written during Tommy's days with his band Energy, all of the songs on Private Eyes were new, written in the studio during the recording sessions. Private Eyes was recorded in Los Angeles at Cherokee Studios, although several participants said it was recorded at the record plant. It was mixed at Trident Studios in London. Phil Palamini, who we've talked about, it's Tommy's friend and owner of Glen Holly Studios. He recalled that Tommy would show up, run through only one or two takes, and leave producer Dennis McKay to put everything together while Tommy went out and partied. In spite of that, it's still a fantastic album, I think.
So, just a couple things because
Yeah.
I want to improve your flow. What was the name of the record company that dropped him?
Nimperer. It's like emperor with an N at the beginning of it.
Oh, so not Empress Nympho.
No.
Yes, no, no, yes, no, yes, no. And then I'm assuming Private Eyes isn't the same thing as the Hall and Oates song, right?
No.
I think you even like Hall and Oates, but wow, that was a emphatic no.
I don't have a problem with Hall & Oates, but no.
Okay. Anyway, so he would go out and party and leave it to his
Yeah, leave it up to the
producer.
producer to finish putting everything together. So there are eight songs on the album. Bustin' Out for Rosie, Sweet Burgundy, Post Toasty, Shake the Devil, which I've mentioned way back when we first started all this. The first time that was the first Tommy Bolin song I had ever heard. And while now I think it's a great song. At 13, I was like, what the fuck is this shit?
Is it so? I've not listened to it because I'm not into him like you are.
Right.
Is this the more jazzy stuff that he likes to do?
Yes.
Okay,
Yeah,
so I can see why younger you wouldn't have appreciated it at that time.
it had a saxophone solo, and I was like, what? This isn't heavy metal. I'll mention that again later.
Ain't Jake E. Lee.
Yeah. Funny enough, I'll mention Jakey Lee later too.
Oh, cool.
The rest of the album was Gypsy Soul, Someday We'll Bring Our Love Home, Hello Again, and You Told Me That You Loved Me.
Wait, are you still talking about songs or are you talking about
Yes,
Us Last Night?
that is the sound song, that is the title of the very last song on the album.
Okay, and I'm assuming it's not Neil Diamond's Hello.
No. No, no,
Okay.
no, no. Which is a good song too.
Yeah, I know you like Neil Diamond.
Oh yeah. Tommy handled all the guitars and vocals. In addition, the album featured, and this I'm going to kind of name some of the people that played on the album have also played with, just to kind of show the caliber of people that were working with Tommy. So Reggie McBride was on bass. He's played with Stevie Wonder, Rare Earth, Glenn Frey from the Eagle from the Glenn Frey Eagle Glenn Frey
There we go. Nice. I wonder how you're going to do that.
B.B. King, Herbie Hancock, Elton John, and Rod Stewart.
Those are some names.
Yeah. Mark Stein on organ. He had played in Vanilla Fudge and at one point was in Alice Cooper's band.
Mark Steen. You can just keep going. You don't have to react.
Bobby Berg on drums. We've mentioned him in previous episodes. He was the drummer in the band Zephyr with Tommy. Norma Jean Bell on backing vocals and saxophone. She had been in Frank Zappa's band at one point prior to
Wow,
this.
cool. And you just met Elton John, mentioned Elton John, and he wrote a song about her too.
Okay.
Goodbye, Norma Jean. Though I never.
And additional drums, Carmine Appice. He played
Ooh.
drums on the song Someday We'll Bring Our Love Home.
Nice. Not to be confused with this relative, Apicy.
Yes, I actually put the pronunciation in there so that I would not screw it You said you only got the one note, so I'm guessing you didn't. Did you look to see if there was any chart information or contemporary reviews or anything?
No, but if you just give your next note, I will have that for you here in like no time at all.
Well, that my next note is that I couldn't find anything on charts or contemporary reviews.
So it's called what's it called?
Private Eyes.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean I will say that it's got 4.5 out of 5 stars on AllMusic, AllMusic.com, and 4 out of 5 stars based on user reviews on the website Discogs, and that's Discogs, Discogs, not Disc Hogs.
I know that, so I just looked at two or three real quick, and when they don't give any information, that typically means it did nothing.
That's, yeah.
Like, it didn't chart anywhere, and yeah.
Johnny Bolin, Tommy's younger brother, mentioned that Rolling Stone complained about the amount of reverb on the album, like Rolling Stone magazine has ever been worth anything in its reviews.
Yeah, but I knew sound engineer from Clinton, who everybody called Captain Reverb, and you can't have too much. Andy, how you doing? Won't give a last name. That way I can say, no, not you, Andy, the other Andy.
Yeah. All right, so Tommy did play the album for John Lord and Ian Paice, who he'd been in Deep Purple with. Played it for them at a party. They both liked it. So now I'm kind of wondering, because we talked about in the Deep Purple episode that Glenn Hughes didn't know that Deep Purple had broken up until he went to Ian Paice's wedding and David Coverdale had to tell him. So I'm kind of wondering if it's the same party, like,
Ah, and there
Paces.
wasn't really a lot of time in between that breakup and the end of this episode, right?
Right. So yeah, I'm kind of wondering if it was like a Paces wedding reception or something.
Would make
I don't
sense.
know. I don't know. Ah, okay. So this next note, actually, it harkens back to another episode that's completely unrelated to any of the stuff we've been talking about.
Nobody expects. Cool.
Oh well, although yeah, you may have mentioned part of this note.
Yeah, maybe.
So Tommy and his girlfriend Karen Ulibarri, they were friends with actress Linda Blair.
Oh, huh. Maybe. Let keep going.
So Tommy and Karen were actually staying at Linda's house. And Glenn Hughes, in this time frame, Glenn Hughes, I guess once he realized Deep Purple wasn't getting back together, he got Trapeze back together or something. I haven't really looked into that. I just know that he's back on the road with Trapeze. So I don't know if it was the guys that he played with before or new lineup, whatever it was. And he comes to the US. And he tried to call up Tommy at Linda Blair's house, but Linda answers the phone. And Glenn invited her to a show, and Linda Blair and Glenn Hughes briefly dated.
I know I mentioned who she dated.
Yeah, you mentioned a few, and I can't remember if Glenn Hughes was in there or not.
I would have to look for my notes.
That's okay.
I'll do that. I'll do that while you keep talking.
Yeah. So according to Johnny Bolin, again Tommy's younger brother, I guess even though Tommy and Karen were both living at Linda Blair's house, they pretty much broke up at this point. Johnny said he didn't know specifics. Tommy wouldn't really talk about what was going on with him and Karen. But Mike Drum, who is the head of the Tommy Bolin Archives, mentioned that the party scene in LA and all of the available sex might have driven a wedge between Karen and Tommy. Glenn Hughes also provided some insight. Tommy was using hard drugs and Karen wasn't. Tommy would go off and get high, and eventually Karen got tired of it. Ironically, as you mentioned in the last Deep Purple episode, Karen started dating Hughes. And I think this is where your note comes in.
yeah, but it still would be
Or a little later.
well, yeah, yes, I
Okay.
still need to wait a little bit for that because
All right.
they connect, but yeah, I
Yeah.
need to wait.
So, yeah. So the ironic thing is she starts dating Glenn Hughes, who, as we've mentioned, was an admitted cocaine addict. But by all accounts, Tommy was okay that Karen and Glenn started dating and he stayed friends with them.
That'll go into my note in a bit.
Yeah. So let's see, he goes in June to record the album. I'm not sure when he started touring to support it. I couldn't really find hard dates for this. I don't think the tour, or I don't think the album was out just yet, because the album doesn't come out until September. But he goes out on tour. I do have a possible date for maybe when the tour started. But he goes out on tour, and this time he's got his brother Johnny on drums. Norma Jean Bell is still with him. She's doing vocals and saxophone. Jimmy Haslip comes in on bass. Now Jimmy, he's played, I mean, his name was not unknown to me when I was going through this. He's played with a bunch of jazz and rock guys. Al Jarreau, Donald Fagen,
Nice.
Chaka Khan,
Nice.
Alan Holdsworth. I've seen it listed that he played with Kiss, but I don't know. I'm kind of guessing that was probably as a session musician, and I'm thinking I might know which album that's on, but I'm not entirely sure because, like I said, he's a bass player, so usually it would have been Gene. But I know in the 80s, when Gene was trying to get his acting career off the ground, he wasn't always there in the studio. So I know Paul or Eric Carr would fill in on bass sometimes on the recordings. But that's not the only connection that Jimmy Haslip has to Kiss. In the early 80s, he was in a band called Blackjack, which had a guitarist named Bruce Kulick, brother of Bob Kulick, who was almost the lead guitarist in Kiss before Ace Frehley came in and auditioned. Bruce would wind up taking over the guitar spot in Kiss in the 80s.
He was also cross about not being invited to the farewell show.
Yeah, I saw that. But Blackjack's vocalist was a guy named Michael Bolitan, or Bolaton, who later on would shorten that last name to Bolton. So it's Michael Bolton, the pop singer.
Yeah, it's bizarre listening to him in that, but it's not bad.
Yeah,
It's
no,
decent
it's
stuff.
not bad. I've got the Blackjack album. I don't listen to it much, but it's a decent album. And Mark Stein, as we mentioned earlier, who played on the album, he
Indeed.
was keyboards. Yes, Steen, whatever. You and your young Frankenstein comments.
People may actually start to get that when we do that episode later this year.
So this lineup, and this is the only hard date that I've got, or possible date. I won't say it's a hard date. This is the only date that I have for maybe when the tour started. Like I said, the album doesn't come out until September. But what I saw was that this lineup played a music festival in Denver, possibly July 18th.
I found something.
Okay.
So the band broke up in when Deep Purple, when were they done?
March 15th, I think.
Okay. In that case, I found this on Concert Archives.
Oh, yeah.
And Tommy Bolin had a Roy Harper open for him April 29th, 1976 at the Roxy Theater in West Hollywood.
Okay. Well, I knew he had toured before he went in to record. So, but yeah, Roy Harper, that's cool.
Yeah, that was April, but then July 13th, Tommy with Moxie in San Antonio. Then I see the July 18th, but then August with Peter Frampton, Steve Miller, Gary Cartwright, September 24th with Blue Oyster Cult, Rick Derringer, the Outlaws. He played with Rush a couple times in late October and early November. He played Foghat in November and Pure Prairie League.
Okay.
So, hey.
Yeah.
I mean, that's there could have been more, and it doesn't give the person you're going to talk about soon.
Right.
But
Okay.
I'm a helper.
You help so good.
Woohoo!
Just like our cats help.
Yes, that's exactly what they do.
Yes, one of the cats likes to go into the bathroom and help Rebecca comb her hair.
It's very sweet. Sweet cat.
So, Tommy's brother Johnny said that around the time that this lineup of the band was playing, Tommy acknowledged to him that his drug use was getting out of hand. So Tommy knew he was, not handling it well. Tom Stevenson, who had played with Tommy in the band Energy, said that while Tommy was in Deep Purple, he was able to get doctors to just write prescriptions for, quote, thousands of pills, unquote. Yeah, but I mean, 1976, a lot of rock stars had that. I mean, that was Elvis.
Well, Elvis is just doing it to keep drugs out of the streets.
Yeah.
He's helping the FBI by taking as many drugs to keep the kids safe.
That's what it was.
More drugs he took, the less there were for young kids to take.
Okay.
He's a savior.
So Dale Porter, who had been in James Gang with Tommy, said that he went to see Tommy's band when they came to Cleveland. His comment on how many drugs Tommy was doing reminded me of the amounts that Ozzy Osbourne has talked about doing. That's a lot of drugs.
That's a lot of drugs.
So after the first part of the tour,
Which, by the way, I did find something else
Yeah.
that the Private Eyes Tour opened in Albuquerque, New Mexico on July 16th. So that was their opening for the Private Eyes Tour.
Okay, so about 2 months before the album actually came out.
Yeah.
Okay. So after the first part of the tour, Tommy's brother Johnny left the band. Apparently, that was because Norma Jean Bell wanted to get a different drummer. And Johnny said, he understood, he was okay with it. But she apparently she wanted a more accomplished and jazz-oriented drummer. Like I said, she'd been in Frank Zappa's band. And and Johnny was, I mean, he was still young. He was just getting started as a professional musician. So I can kind of see that. And he acknowledged that. He admitted that, he was still learning it,
That's cool that he was just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, big brother.
Keyboard player Mark Stein also left, but he said this was due to Tommy's drug use. So keyboardist Max Carl stepped in. He had played in Energy with Tommy. He would actually later go on to join 38 Special and Grand Funk Railroad, where I believe he was on vocals with Grand Funk.
That's cool. What country are they from?
Grand Funk? They're an American band.
Yes, you got it.
Replacing Johnny on drums was Mark Craney. And I don't have, actually don't have anything on him. So both the first and second parts of the tour have been described as hit or miss due to Tommy's drug use. During the second part of the tour, the band started to drift into more of a jazz fusion style, and this led to talk of what Tommy's next album would be.
I bet they were excited.
I think they were. So Max Carl, Mark Craney, and Jimmy Haslip, apparently they were all vegetarians, and Max Carl and Mark Craney tried to steer Tommy towards a healthier lifestyle. They were, trying to get him to eat better, not do all the drugs. And according to Max Carl, he seemed interested, but he just was having a hard time not doing drugs.
Well, that's, yeah, it's tough to stop.
Around this time, his relationship with his manager, Barry Fay, was starting to sour. Tommy felt that Fay wasn't holding up his end of the deal and was getting ready to leave him for a different manager. Which brings us to Thanksgiving of 1976. Bolan went home to Sioux City so that he could spend the holiday with his family before going back out on the road to open for Jeff Beck. While in town, he hung out with a local band, jammed with them, and shot up some heroin.
As one does.
He passed out. We do that all the time. He passed out and almost died, but one of his friends that was there performed CPR and revived him. Which brings us to December 3rd, 1976, at the High Alley Auditorium in Miami. It's the first night of what is supposed to be the tour with Jeff Beck. The show goes great. Everyone's excited for the future. This show was recorded and has been released as Live in Miami at High Alley, the final show. So, what happened after the show?
Well, if you want my note, says Hughes moves in with and later marries Tommy's ex Karen, who we've mentioned,
Yes.
and they would get a postcard from him saying he'd see them at the holidays, because as Jody mentioned, they were still getting along, but then learned the next day,
Yeah.
dun, dun. Okay, I'll let you go.
So what happened after? Well, that depends on who tells the story. There's a bit of finger pointing as to who is responsible, but there are several things that everybody kind of agrees on. Tommy partied back at the hotel after the show. At one point, he supposedly called Karen to tell her how well the show went. And supposedly proposed to her. Yeah, but she turned him down because Glenn Hughes had already proposed and she'd already said yes. It was mentioned that his demeanor changed after that. There were some friends from Los Angeles. One of them was Phil Palomini. These people had shown up with drugs, and I don't know how involved with that Phil was, whether he was one of the ones that brought the drugs or if it was some of these other people. There's also been comments made that Barry Fay was the one who told these people to go to Florida. I don't know. Tommy does the cocaine, he does the heroin, he does the booze. He didn't pass out. He had a bad reaction, and he was described as laying on the floor, shaking and turning purple. Somebody called down to the hotel doctor, who told them to call 911, which they didn't do. Because drugs and cops, not a good combination. And because of Tommy's record deal, and I'm not sure why that was relevant, but that was brought up. Someone in the entourage said, he's done this before, he'll be fine. So they strip him, put him in the bathtub, pour ice on him, and run cold water over him until they think he's better, and then they put him in bed. So Tommy's bodyguard, LC Clayton, said that after this, he kicked everyone out, swept the room to make sure there wasn't anything drug related, then went to his own room to clean up, as he said he was covered in various of Tommy's body fluids. Because, Tommy's throwing up, he's probably pissing and shitting himself.
And to be fair, they're not wrong. This probably happened several times.
It's early on the morning of December 4th, 1976. 20 minutes later, he comes back to Tommy's room to check on him. Tommy has a needle in his arm and is dead.
So he woke up long enough to put another more smack into himself.
Well, see, this is where it gets kind of, and this was stuff I didn't know. I'd always known Tommy had died from a drug overdose.
That's why we do this, so we learn more.
Yeah. So according to Clayton, now I will say this, I didn't put this in my notes, but I do remember reading. Some of the other people that were there that night said that Clayton was carrying a gun and he chased some of them out or wouldn't let them in and was literally holding the gun on them in the doorway. So, there's some people that point the finger at Clayton. But what Clayton said was it wasn't the arm Tommy usually used to shoot up heroin, and he didn't think Tommy was in any shape to give himself another dose. Plus, as
No.
mentioned, he had swept the room. He implies someone did this to Tommy, but he doesn't name names. Although I think there are some others who imply that Barry Fay might have had a hand in it, as Barry Fay
Yeah.
claimed that Tommy had owed him money, and Tommy had been saying that Fay wasn't paying him what he was due. Fay had also taken out an insurance policy on Tommy earlier in the year. He said that was Tommy's idea.
I was wondering how he's going to get his money if he killed him, but now it makes sense.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that was the thing. Faye was listed as the beneficiary, not Tommy's parents.
That's sketchy as fuck.
Yeah. The Miami police, they didn't do jack shit. They chalked it up as an OD, left it at that. They
Okay,
talked
now.
to yeah, they talked to a few people. Apparently, they told LC Clayton, just don't come back to Miami.
I don't care about hippies, look at what they did to Jim Morrison.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's unfortunately the end of Tommy.
By the way, you should never, ever trust anybody whose name is Faye, because, and no, this is not a slur against alternative lifestyles. This is, don't ever trust the elves.
Yeah. So yeah, that's how it ended for Tommy, but I'm not done. I still got two or three more paragraphs here. So as I said way back in the first episode that we did on Tommy, I discovered him in 1986 on a heavy metal compilation, which I still say he had no business being on, or at least not the song Shake the Devil, as he had other songs that would have fit better. I really think had they used something like the song Teaser instead, I would have had a much different opinion of Tommy initially. But between that and the first time I listened to Deep Purple's Last Concert in Japan album, which, if you want thoughts on that, go back and listen to the Come Taste the Band tour episode. I wasn't impressed. But, again, I'm like 13 years old.
So what was wrong with the cover on the album you listened to?
What you mean the song?
Yeah. So,
Shake the. Wait, which one?
I may be thinking of a different compilation. Which one are you talking about?
Oh, no. Yeah, the Metal Mania that came out in the early 80s.
Oh, so it wasn't a compilation. It was a compilation, but was it actually him or was it a cover?
No, this was actually him.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm
no,
sorry. When you said
I know what you're.
compilation, I jumped ahead.
Yeah, you're thinking of a different compilation. I didn't have a note on
Whoops.
that, but we can mention that.
That may be the first time I listened to him, because you were kind of into him when this came out a little bit by then.
Yeah.
And you know how to get me into to music. You're like, well, listen to this first, and here's the real one.
Yeah. So yeah, over time, I started to rethink the Last Concert in Japan by Deep Purple. I listened to it a little bit more and found that I didn't mind it so much, especially the songs that had been recorded by the Mark IV lineup, as opposed to the songs that had been recorded by the Mark II lineup. So, while I still didn't like the way they did Highway Star or Smoke on the Water, it wasn't. My reasons for not liking those were not just Tommy. I didn't like the way Coverdale, because On Smoke on the Water, Coverdale sings the first two verses, and then instead of singing the third verse, he goes back to the first.
Second verse, same as the first.
Yeah.
Woo!
But
Yeah, I like how bands can change the things, but I don't want them to change that. That is a bit much.
yeah. But you know, the stuff like You Keep On Moving or Love Child, or you know, some of the songs that were off of the Come Taste the Band album, I enjoyed those songs. Tommy's song Wild Dogs from the Teaser album was one that they played live, and it's probably my favorite. That version of that song is probably my favorite recording by Tommy. By 1989, I was excited when the first Tommy Bolin box set came out. It was titled The Ultimate. I don't know how many vinyl records were in the box set, but I know if you bought the cassette or the CD, it was a double cassette or a double CD. So we were talking about the different compilations, and the one you were thinking of is Stairway to Heaven, Highway to Hell, which was it tied into the Moscow Music Peace Festival, which was also in 1989, and Motley Crue, because Nikki Sixx from Motley Crue is a Tommy Bolin fan. And Motley Crue did a cover of the song Teaser to put on that album. The whole concept of the Stairway to Heaven, Highway to Hell album was that every band that participated covered a song by a band or artist who had died from alcohol or drug abuse.
Yeah, it's part of the Make a Difference Foundation that Doc McGee put together to fight youth alcohol and drug abuse, and was probably a tax write-off now that I think about it when I'm older. But hey, you
Yeah.
know, the help to help.
Well, it was a good idea, but you know, and as critical as we've been of Motley Crue over the years on this podcasting, we've praised them as well, but
They were great at first.
yeah, and in 89, when they went over to Moscow with everybody else, they were the only four people on that plane not doing drugs.
That's
Even
amazingly
though,
somehow.
even though the whole point of what they were doing was about, you know, keeping kids off of drugs.
Yeah. Well, again, they're like Elvis. The more drugs they take, the less there are for the kids to take.
Yeah.
We're doing it for the kids.
So, yeah. So, getting this box set, the
Oh yeah,
ultimate.
which I did get too, by the way, and I liked it because of
Yeah.
you.
So listening to it, getting to hear the breadth of Tommy's playing as showcased on there, it's eye-opening. And you know, he influenced a lot of guitarists. Some of them were his contemporaries. I mean, Jeff Beck. Jeff Beck was known to in the last few tours that he did before he died, he was known to play at least one song that Tommy Bolin had recorded with Billy Cobham on the I was just thinking of this earlier. I cannot remember the name of the album. It's a jazz album. And I think the song was Stratus.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And Jeff Beck would open his shows with it. Jakey Lee, as we mentioned earlier, he also cites Tommy as one of his influences.
They're both class acts, too.
Yeah. So it took many years after his death, but Tommy's family eventually did get some of the royalties that were owed to Tommy as an entertainment lawyer. I don't remember his name, but he contacted him out of the blue. He said, "You know, there's some money sitting here that belonged to your son. I can get it." That
Good.
was the
Good
first
for
time
him.
Tommy's family had seen any money. Barry
Fucking
Fay
greedy
paid for
bastard.
Tommy's funeral, and that was it. That was the only money that, yeah, I mean, they didn't even see that money. Barry Fay paid for it.
Well, you know, keeps a little suspicion off if you do a little bit like that.
Yeah.
I'd like to point out that neither of us have said he's guilty, so fuck off.
No, yeah, and I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe Clayton missed a needle. And Tommy was able to shoot himself up one last time. Maybe somebody did it to him. Clayton says somebody did it to him, but he won't say who he thinks it is. Although reading his comments, I really do think he thought it was Barry Fay. You know, and that, not that Barry Fay was there and did it himself, but that Barry Fay had something to do with it. Because he talked about some of the strange shit that was going on. You know, he was Tommy's bodyguard. He said the road manager never stayed at the same hotel they were in. He always stayed at some nicer hotel somewhere else in town. So, you know,
So, I'm not saying you should make it nicer for yourself, but I don't blame you for not wanting to necessarily be around.
So, but Tommy's legacy over the years has been it's been kept alive by the Tommy Bolin archives. I mentioned that earlier. They have released demos and live recordings over the years. Phil Palomini, as of the interview that he did for the book that I mentioned, The Touched by Magic by Greg Prado, he said that he was trying to get some of the recordings that he had made of Tommy jamming with various other musicians, including, you know, Jeff Beck and the Wailers, who had played with Bob Marley and some of these other people. He was trying to get those released, and apparently since that interview, he has at least released one volume of those that I did not know was out, so I'm going to have to get that. But
Oh
yeah,
yeah, I just look at his discography and they have a ton of unreleased stuff. Well, like previously unreleased that they put on, yeah, things.
I think at the time he was trying to get the clearances, because like I said, there were a lot of people that were actual recording artists that just, you know, they'd meet Tommy and he'd say, "Hey, let's go back and record, you know, just jam or whatever." And so they've done several tribute memorial concerts. But let me redo. I'm going to say that a little slower. They've done several tribute and memorial concerts over the years. A lot of them, well, I won't say a lot, but I know some of them have been headlined by Glenn Hughes.
Nice.
And I think maybe organized by him, but I think, you know, Tommy's brother Johnny has also been involved. And I do want to say that at this point, you know, because we've talked about early on, we talked about Tommy's parents. We've mentioned Johnny a lot, and Johnny's gone on to, I mean, he's played with, I think, like, he's played with a lot of bands. I don't remember all of them, but maybe like Black Oak Arkansas and some of those other bands
That's
like
the one
that.
I knew.
Tommy and Johnny had another brother, Rick, that they called Pudge. And Tommy's parents have both since passed away. And so has Pudge. So Johnny is the only one that's left.
Kind of sucks.
And I guess final note, Glenn Hughes and Karen Ulibarri did get married, which you mentioned. But they split up sometime in the mid to late 80s, from what I saw. I for some reason I was thinking they were still together, but I think I was thinking that because I had watched a YouTube video several years ago, and the two of them were sitting next to each other talking about Tommy, and it just kind of seemed like they were still together, but apparently not. But they have both tried to carry Tommy's memory forward as well, so.
By the way, I'm extremely sad because I was going to make a Voltron joke, but I was wrong. It's Pidge.
Yes, it is.
Damn
Janet.
it.
But
Sorry.
that's it. That's it. That's the Tommy Bolin story.
Gather around children and listen to my words of the saga of Tommy Bolin and drugs. Sorry,
Yes,
trying to
don't
make a
do
rhyme
drugs.
and Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. One, I do have one other thing. This is kind of a, damn it, what do they call it?
You know, that one thing.
This is an errata.
Ah, errata.
Yeah.
Errata.
So in the episode on Deep Purple's tour for Come Taste the Band, I mentioned post Deep Purple stuff that was going on, and that Glenn Hughes was in Black Sabbath, and I said that Tony Iommi punched him in the nose because, you know, because of Glenn's drug use. I still think he was punched in the nose, but apparently it was not Tony Iommi. It was tour manager or somebody. It was somebody else, and it was like 6 shows into the tour. And whatever it was, that's what I'm thinking. He broke his nose because then Glenn couldn't sing, and that's why they had to hire a replacement.
Nice.
Who, by the way, the replacement's name was Ray Gillan, no relation to Ian Gillan, although he had a similar voice. Ray Gillan wound up in the band Badlands with former Ozzy Osbourne guitarist, who we just mentioned, Jake E. Lee,
Jakey Lee.
who was influenced by Tommy Bolin.
Badlands is one of my favorite, never quite made it bands.
They were really good.
So I have two notes that I highlighted blue, which means I think I might have said them. But I'll give them real quick just in case. And if I said the first one, then you can tell me and I won't say the second. Because I would have said them together. But Tommy wanted to be famous because he saw Elvis and learned how to play the drums and piano first before the guitar.
I think we talked about that in the first episode, but yeah.
And then, well, just in case, great utility session guitarist like Pagey, but pity couldn't quite find the right mix like Jimmy Page did to become super and miss the 27 Club by 2 years because he's only 25 when he passed away.
He was. And I know we had not talked about I was going to mention his age. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so maybe I
So
didn't. So.
yeah, and maybe, I don't know, maybe that's why he kind of hasn't been as well known, is because he didn't quite make it to the 27 Club.
Yeah, because there are other musicians out there who are just as good as all of them, but for some reason that club is special. Isn't that special?
So, but yeah, I highly recommend checking out any of the stuff that we've mentioned that Tommy played on, his solo albums. Both are in print, so they're easy to find. As a matter of fact, Teaser, there's a deluxe version of Teaser with some different mixes and stuff like that. So I've not picked that up, but I know that's out. The
I mean, I'm not the
box
fan
set.
you are, but I've listened to it to him, and he's fracking great.
He was phenomenal talent, and it's heartbreaking because it's like, he was so good and he could have done so much. And just cut down too young. I remember a guitar magazine, I guess around 89, 90, something like that. It was after the box set had come out. I think it was Guitar for the Practicing Musician was the name of the magazine, and Whitesnake was putting out a new album. It's a Slip of the Tongue, I think. It's one I don't have, but Steve Vai was on it, and they interviewed David Coverdale because he in White between Deep Purple and Whitesnake, he had worked with some really fantastic guitarists, and he just his one comment about Tommy Bolin was he had a love-hate relationship with Tommy. He
Well,
loved Tommy, but he hated him for what he did to himself.
yeah, and if Tommy and Hughes had been a little more chill, maybe Deep Purple could have kept going.
Oh, that was something else I saw, because we mentioned in the last Deep Purple episode, you had said something about go buy all the compilations, and I'm like, no,
Yeah.
there's too many.
Well, I said buy the stuff, I'll buy all the stuff, and yeah, I guess. I didn't specify.
I was looking through some of those compilations though, and I am happy to say that even though it's usually the same one or two songs, a lot of the compilations that I do not have by Deep Purple do include the Mark IV lineup. So I am happy about that they actually do make an effort to put some of Tommy's stuff in with the other stuff on Deep Purple.
Nice.
Not any of the compilations I actually own, but
They're there.
but they're there, and I was actually very happy to see that they, because some of them were like, Mark 1 through Mark 4, So I was like, okay, that's awesome.
I'm so happy. I
Yeah.
could go for a walk.
Yeah. But that's it.
Awesome. I've got nothing else.
I hope you've enjoyed our series on Tommy Bolin. I'm sorry it ends on such a sad note.
Yeah, downer.
My name's not Debbie.
Oh, that's right. You haven't done Dallas.
What?
You know, Debbie. Debbie did Dallas. Debbie does Dallas.
I was thinking Debbie Downer from, was it Saturday Night Live?
I just thought it was a. I just thought her name was like a saying.
I think it is, but yeah, I don't
Anyway,
know. On that
I'm James.
note, I'm Jody.
We'll talk to you all later.
Bye.
The Macabre Manor is brought to you by the Twin Terrors. All rights reserved. Stay tuned for some fun outtakes.
I almost posted a, the one I sent you and Rob and Donnie, the this post could have been avoided with a condom. And I'll be right back. Oh, maybe. Can't move. Knee stuck. I'm old.
Computer stopped recording for some reason, even though I did not tell it to.
Oh, I paused mine. Maybe it makes yours pause then too.
I
Just
don't
didn't want to waste my memory since we're waiting here a second and we're talking.
know. Okay.
Let's see what happens if I unpause. Is it recording again?
Yeah, it had already started.
Wow, that's weird.
Yeah. So I watched Ralph Bakshi's Wizards earlier. I don't know if you've
Oh
seen.
yeah. It's been a while, but it's good.
Yeah, it wasn't. I guess I didn't realize that he had tried to make a kids movie. I mean, I knew it wasn't, you know, the other, like Fritz the Cat or anything like that, but I guess I didn't realize that he tried to do it as a kids movie. I liked it. Yeah. So I don't know why, but my tablet just gave me an error screen and is rebooting. So give me a moment here. I don't.
You have exactly 1.25 moments from now. Feeling generous today. Oh, wow. I actually looked it up. In medieval times, a moment was 90 seconds long.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
I'll have to
interesting.
remember that.
Yeah. And I mean, nowadays, people just look at it like it's a short amount of time, like just a second or two or blink of an eye kind of thing. But I'm gonna remember that too.
Yeah, a moment, 90
Give me a
seconds.
moment. Moment's up. It's not been a minute and a half.
Good. This gives us something to put in the outtakes.
Vamp, 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 vamp.
Yeah.
Our amps went out. I don't need an amp. I'm just going to sing really loud. All right, Robert. Anyone remember laughter?
No.
While it's rebooting, you know, all those posts I've been putting on Facebook, just whatever dark ass, you know, funny shit that I find humorous, like
Yes. Yeah.
what's a good one? Disappointed, that's what you get for expecting things.
Yeah.
And do something nice for somebody today. Leave them alone. Life is hard enough without your bullshit. Almost everybody who reacts laughs because they know I'm just my humor is dark. But I've had four or five people give me a private message and say, "Are you doing okay?"
I'm not gonna ask. I know why you're doing Okay, let me get my notes open again.
Yeah.
Damn it.
So I, while you're loading it up, I asked a question on Ireland travel planning trips because we're going there,
Cool.
and we're getting a car that's a hybrid. And I said, well, we rented a car, it might be a hybrid. The states are horrible for charging stations. And I said, is there anything we should know about gassing up and or charging up? So both. Like I wanted information on gas stations too, and they're all like, hybrids use gas. And I'm like, well, yes, I know. So I had to do an edit. I said that's. I also said gassing up. I want information on both, please. Is it moving?
It is doing that.
Is it grooving?
No.
Never mind, I'm done. I'm just gonna sit here and drink my beer. From
Okay.
Private Eyes, watching you.
I'm ready.
Woohoo! All right, SpongeBob, let's go.